Some crimes are never forgotten, others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome on back to another episode of Speak to Truth Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Tardio. And today, ladies and gentlemen, I am being joined by Nate Vance. Nate and I are going to be breaking down a lot of stuff that came out this weekend for you guys. In the meantime, I want you all to sit back, relax, and listen to this beautiful, beautiful footage and enjoy the new studio of the Bunker before we get rolling.
See, what's odd is I'm on your YouTube page right now. Oh, well, that's not okay. Yeah. Now I got the live. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm already getting mic comments.
How's that for the volume, ladies and gentlemen? Can you guys hear me a lot better now? You guys like that? Is that better? You guys hear me okay? Give me a microphone check. Give me a microphone check. He's coming home. Well, ladies and gentlemen, good morning, good morning, good morning. Nate, sir, how are you on this fine day?
I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah.
Doing pretty good.
How do we feel about this? You see the news about the aircraft being released to the U.S. from Qatar?
Yeah, I don't think anything's going to come of that, to be honest with you. The U.S. is, they may have offered it and said something, but the Secret Service is never going to let the president fly around in a plane the Qataris built.
So I had to dig through all the BS and actually get through to the truth of this matter of what's actually taking place. And it's Qatar giving the United States an airplane. And it's not even giving the airplane to the United States. It's actually, or to Trump directly, it's actually going over to, how do I want to say this, the Air Force. And the Air Force is going to completely and totally refit it as a temporary Air Force One. So we're essentially getting an airplane that's going to get gutted and retrofitted, because it's not like the president of the United States could just randomly jump into a freaking Qatari airplane and do whatever the hell it wants with it. Probably one of the most ridiculous things I've heard.
No, they'd have to. Yeah, I mean, if they did that, I guarantee you there would be bugs all over that thing, and all kinds of listening devices would be in there if they thought that the president was just going to get in there and hang out, right? So there's no way the Secret Service would let him get in there unless they basically can empty it down to a bare hole and then put everything back in it. So yep. I haven't dug into it that far. Like, I don't even know why the Qataris are offering an airplane, but
it's not worth it to dig into. It's stupid. So, like, people are trying to say also that Trump is going to end up getting the airplane immediately, like, following his... No, it's going over to, like, his museum and everything else. It's just stupid. It's a waste of time to even look into, to be honest with you. It's dumb. About the... you see also that we ended up having the freaking tariffs popped for 90 days. Everything is going to get dropped down to 10% between us and China.
I did see that. I saw some other, like, conflicting reports, you know, people, you know, China saying that there was no deal, but I think that's just bullshit reporting. If it looks like we're making progress on a deal, that's a good thing. I mean, we can't have perpetual trade wars with high tariffs. I mean, tariffs are good as a tool for temporary purposes to get people's attention, but they can't last forever. So it's a good thing if they're going in the right direction.
Yeah. I'm being told I'm crackling on my end when it comes down to speaking, so we'll see what ends up happening here. But big news is Eden Alexander. He's being released today in a hostage negotiation that ended up taking part. So Eden's going to be coming home sometime soon. That's pretty good, I guess. He's coming home, this American hostage. And the good news about this is he has, oh God, that video is freaking great. We're going to hold on to that. Where did that? Here we go. Trump ended up announcing it. Happy to announce Eden Alexander, an American citizen who has been held hostage since October 23rd, is coming home to his family. I am grateful to all those involved in making this happen. Blah, 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 blah. He's on his way. How do we feel about that?
It's always a good thing.
My question is, what did we do in order to make that happen?
I don't know. Like, you got to give something to get something. So I don't know what we gave, or, you know, maybe the pressure that's being applied to all those people over there in that region are finally like, dude, what is it going to take for you to stop bombing the shit out of us? Right. And they're starting to trickle things out of the region now.
We'll see what ends up happening, but over in his, like, hometown this morning, which I think is really cool. Let me grab this one up. This is his hometown from this morning. You had people outside at 5 a.m. that were gathered. Just go ahead and mute that. That's a look at his hometown here in the United States of America, with people just gathered, waiting, ready to go, amped up to go see the freaking guy. Pretty freaking pumped to get him out, because he's been held hostage ever since. And just a couple months ago, Hamas straight up said that they basically weren't sure whether or not they ended up having him. His mom actually talked to a reporter just a little bit ago about him being released and being a hostage. Have you seen this before?
No.
What is the first thing that you're going to do when it down returns?
The first thing? Oh, my God. I can only, like, feel it. I can feel him. I can feel the hug. I can feel just to kiss him and to tell him I love you so much. We missed you so much, and that's it, just to be, you know, in the moment of the hug. And I can't wait for him to come back. And I'm seeing us in New York City, going to the Soho, to this favorite sushi place, to see some arts thing, to do some shopping, you know, just to spend time together, because this is something that I miss so much.
An American citizen from New Jersey is the epitome of a strong woman, a lioness.
Bring it on home. Yes, bring them all home now.
What is the first thing?
Yep. Bring them home, baby. Bring them home. And I mean, I know Netanyahu, when I went over and I looked it up, said that any negotiations that are going to be taking place from now on are going to end up taking place under basically fire. Like, they're not going to stop fighting in order for any more of these hostage negotiations. So that's just going to be ongoing.
Yeah, I'm like, the one thing about, you know, his mother, hopefully that reunion is not public. I hope they have like, I hope they have like a part of the, you know, airport where they can just be, you know, that it's good that there's like a big public gathering, you know, supporting his return.
Yeah.
But hopefully the family can get some alone time and not be distracted with all the people. Like it would be a nice photo op and I get all that, but that should be between them and nobody else, honestly.
Yeah, well, his family released a public statement yesterday. They said, "Today on Mother's Day, we received the greatest gift imaginable, news that our beautiful son Eden is returning home after 583 days in captivity in Gaza. We express our deepest gratitude to President Trump, Steve Witkoff, and the U.S. administration for their tireless work to make this happen. We urge the Israeli government and the negotiating teams, please don't stop. We hope our son's release begins negotiations for all 58 remaining hostages, ending this nightmare for them and their families. No hostage should be left behind." And there is a video just a little bit ago of his mom that's about to jump on a helicopter and fly her butt out to Reem in order to meet her son. He is being released and then being flown directly into Reem. Oh. So, you know, while you say that you hope it's not public, I feel like this is going to be one of those things that it's just going to be public. Like, it just is.
That's yeah, like, I mean, I know there's going to be people around, but hopefully they give them, like, a lounge or something where they can just hang out by themselves for a little bit without all the distractions of the media. And, you know, that would be one of those things where I just wouldn't want it to be, at least for a little while, part of a media circus. Like, let them have the reunion, and then they can come out and make a public statement together.
Yeah. Now, here is another big thing that's going down over in the Middle East. So yesterday, the United States and Iran had ended up meeting up. And I bring this up because Steve Witkoff was given huge freaking praise in getting this hostage released, right? And getting Eden released. Huge praise in getting him released. And I know, me, myself, I've been pretty critical of Witkoff, and I think rightfully so for some of the things he's done. He's came out and he's made very public statements as to whether or not Iran should be allowed to, you know, continue on with their freaking nuclear weapons program. I call it a nuclear weapons program, right? But it's not. They're, you know, peaceful nuclear energy, according to them. It's the enrichment of uranium.
It's a nuclear weapons program.
Right. Right. Right.
That's what
so
it is.
Here he is. This is his statement. Yeah, it's a nuclear weapons program. Thanks. Let's listen to a statement that he made about their, like, what they should and shouldn't be allowed to do.
First of all, we're never doing a JCPOA deal where sanctions come off and there's no sunsetting of their obligations. So that doesn't make sense. That was a mismatched procedure in JCPOA. We believe that they cannot have enrichment. They cannot have centrifuges. They cannot have anything that allows them to build a weapon. We believe in all of that. That was not JCPOA. JCPOA had sunset provisions that burned off the obligations and burned off the sanctions relief at inappropriate times. It's never going to happen in this deal. First of all,
so United States, very, very adamant. These guys, they're not going to be allowed to enrich uranium. Iran, however, decided to come out and make different statements following the negotiation over this weekend. Iran actually came out and said, no, it's still on, like, we will not give up on that. And so why are we further negotiating for them or with them? What would be the purpose?
In my view, it's kicking the can down the road until you can get all your things in place that you need to get in place. Other than that, I don't know. Like, I don't know why you would continue to negotiate, but I mean, it's, you know, think about, you are a cop, right?
Yep.
So if you draw your gun on somebody that's being aggressive, you're going to tell him to drop his weapon up until the moment that you pull the trigger, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to wait on their actions. I mean, if I see something move, yeah, you pull out your gun for a damn reason to make sure that if you need to drop them, you can.
Yeah, but right up until that moment, you're still saying, you know, hey, buddy, drop your weapon, drop your weapon, drop your weapon. And then when he commits that one action that gives you the
right,
the reason to use deadly force, then you use it. And I think that's basically what we're seeing in a larger scale. The U.S. is moving things in place and preparing. What do you think? Like, I did see some scuttlebutt about the B-2s moving out of Diego Garcia, but I only saw it from one source and never saw it anywhere else.
Yeah, I heard that they were being moved out of Diego Garcia. Somebody told me last night, possibly being moved down to Australia. But even if those B-2s are being moved, I don't know if that's really that big of a deal. Like we talked about with the Red Sea reopening, you've got those aircraft carriers that are now going to be freed up a little bit. And, you know, if both those carriers end up moving out of the Red Sea, people forget that Camp Lemieux over inside of Djibouti is right there. And they launch fast movers out of that place all the freaking time. And so if we really want, we can continue to project ourselves.
Yeah, I still think, like, yeah, even if the B-2s were to move, like, the other thing people don't realize about those things, that's the first generation of, like, radar absorbent materials that are on those things. Mm-hmm. They're very, very labor intensive. So if they've been in use and stationed on a strip of sand in the middle of the ocean, they're probably going to require some maintenance after 6 weeks of use. So It could just be a rotation back, you know, and then when we use those things, sometimes we don't even have forward deployed bases. They just fly all the way across the planet, drop bombs, and then fly all the way home.
Yeah, it's very
so true. It's not like they have to be in Diego Garcia to strike Iran. They could do that from Whiteman Air Force Base.
Yeah, I mean they could do it from wherever the hell they want. The freaking B-21 as well, like has that ability. They could launch it from the U.S. and fly that sucker all the way over there, bomb the crap out of them, and then fly all the way home, and nobody would ever be able to track the movement of that particular aircraft.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So I think the movement of them is kind of a nothing burger. Doesn't really matter.
Patrick Loudmass, he says, could the B-2s moving be a sign of a strike coming? The way Iran cannot see them coming already, having known where they were stationed. It could also be, in my opinion, it could also be that there was a credible threat or something like that, that maybe they wanted to move or they're doing a feint like we talked about before. I really don't see all of those B-2s being used over inside Yemen. There was no reason for them to be in Yemen. And like Nate said, you always want to hold somebody at gunpoint. And it's not just those B-2s that we were holding Iran at gunpoint with. I think we've got plenty of other assets over within the region that are going to be capable of striking them if we need to. I'm not worried about it. And like Nate said, one source, right? You had a grand total of one that you ended up seeing on that. Same. I didn't see a lot.
Yeah, it was that one, you know, flight tracker guy. And then everything I saw quoted about it subsequently was just pointing back to him.
Yeah, right. let me see right here. Here is the foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi. All right, this is his quote that he ended up giving. He ended up saying that the talks ended up being more straightforward compared to the last three rounds. And he said, we now understand each other and hope to make further progress moving forward. Iran's uranium enrichment must continue, although its scope and level may change. So Iran's trying to say that we're going to allow them to continue to enrich uranium. And I haven't seen any signs from this current administration that would even be a freaking consideration. Not a single one.
No, we're clearly divided, you know, our two nations on that. And the thing is, and I've said this before, the problem with allowing them to have any kind of uranium enrichment program is who's going to do the inspections to determine that it's not going to be weaponized. And it's not going to be the U.S. They're not going to let U.S. inspectors just have carte blanche to run around in Iran. So it'd have to be somebody else. It's not going to be the Russians. The Russians have basically told us to go pound sand. So, and that's also when you started to see the rhetoric from the U.S., you know, change from we need to make sure you're not weaponizing this to you're not allowed to do it at all. So basically, no inspectors, no nuclear program whatsoever. And I think we're rapidly approaching a point where we have to smash the hell out of it. Now, what's interesting is in the India-Pakistan conflict, you just saw where the Indians bombed a nuclear facility held by the Pakistanis. That happened yesterday. So there's a precedent being set for being able to do that, and that's interesting considering what's happening between the United States and Iran.
Yeah, well, we shall see. I don't think we're going to give up on them, and I think we're going to continue to bomb the shit out of them. It's just a matter of time before it ends up going down. That's my opinion. It's where it's at. And I want to get to the main reason now why I ended up bringing you on today, because we're going to be talking about Ukraine and we're going to be talking about Russia. One of the things that I ended up noticing was this. Let me get it up on the screen. Russia is building a major new explosives facility in Ukraine as the war ends up dragging on. This actually came out on May 8th, ended up flying underneath my radar. And as we go down, we take a look, they're saying that this new facility that they're building is going to be capable. It's over near Bisk, right? Siberian city of Bisk, about 3,000 kilometers east of Moscow. So that would be way deeper than Ukraine has struck. Are you aware of anything that struck that far out? I'm not.
Not that far, no.
Right. So they moved it way out there. And allegedly what this place is going to be doing is building RDX, and for those, or manufacturing RDX. And for those that don't know, RDX is a very potent freaking explosive. It's a base explosive in a lot of different things. You could water it down and turn it into other things. T4, for example, is primarily composed of RDX. But this is supposed to be capable of filling 1.28 million like Russian OF-29 artillery shells. That's what this new facility is going to be capable of. And yet we are moving into peace talks. How do we feel about that?
Well, first of all, I think we're moving into peace talks. It's almost, I don't think the peace talks are going to go anywhere. You know, it's kind of like Iran and the U.S. Russia's requirements for peace talks are ridiculous and non-starters. They basically, they require that Ukraine is demilitarized, right? That they have a neutral, like the U.N., is going to protect Ukraine, and that they have to completely dismantle and demilitarize their military. It's asinine, right? Like the asks of Putin are silly. So the peace talks aren't going to go anywhere, but it's, you're still providing somebody with an off ramp, and then you can really determine and say, okay, who's really the one who wants peace here, right? And you know, there's a couple other things with Ukraine that's going on why I think they're asking for peace talks. Ukraine's transitioning over to a core-based system, right? They're basically transitioning over to like kind of a Western style of military in how their TO&Es break down. That's very good for them. They should do it. It's also something that would benefit them for offensive operations. So if there's a ceasefire, and you've noticed that like Putin is like, no, I don't want to have a ceasefire because the Ukrainians will just rearm and refit. He's absolutely correct. The manufacturing capacity in Russia can't keep up with their losses. So, but Ukraine is continuously getting stronger, right? There's a bunch more F-16s are about to show up. You got the Mirage 2000 fighters about to show up. They're bringing on a ballistic missile that's kind of like the Iskander, but it's on steroids. It's a Iskander type missile that can go about 1,000 kilometers. That's going to be really bad for Russia. So a 30-day ceasefire will benefit both. Both sides will be able to rearm and refit a little bit, but the Ukrainian, the difference in how much the Ukrainians will be able to increase their strength versus how much the Russians will be able to improve their position will benefit the Ukrainians more. So that's why you see Russia resisting it and Ukraine pushing for it.
Yeah.
But I think both sides know that they're in an impasse on what they want for like a lasting peace. So I just don't see it going anywhere.
Well, how can they even call it that? So Kiev came out this morning and ended up saying that 108 drones got launched at Ukraine overnight from Russia. And this ceasefire is supposed to be on right now.
Yeah, they don't stop. Well, no. So what Putin did, Putin had that like midnight, more midnight Moscow time. That midnight speech that he came out and made, and they demanded a ceasefire, and he said, you know, no, I'm not going to give you one now, but I'll meet in Turkey and we'll discuss it. So now they're meeting in Turkey to have like a, you know, that was the ultimatum and then Zelensky said, okay, cool, I'll meet you there.
Well, so, yeah. To give a rundown on that, you know, you have May 10th, you ended up having the leaders from France, Germany, and Poland, with backing from the U.S., ended up giving Moscow an ultimatum that said accept a 30-day ceasefire starting on May 12th. And I think it was Zelensky actually following Putin talking about the 72-hour victory, you know, victory freaking ceasefire. And then Zelensky came back and said, okay, I'm good with 30. And then everybody came out on May 10th and basically pushed Putin into doing it. Putin, first off, like on the 11th, so we're talking yesterday, ended up initially rejecting the ultimatum. and said that Kiev needed to engage in direct talks in Istanbul on the 15th without, and I quote, preconditions, saying that the ceasefire could be agreed upon during the negotiations. So Putin's not going by, you know, he never agreed to it. He's not going to. And he's saying that if you want a ceasefire, let's go do it over inside of frickin' Istanbul.
Yeah, which is, so Zelensky said, okay, cool, I'll see you there, which was kind of funny. But, you know, it's, and I've been talking to people about this over the weekend as this came out. What you're seeing from the West, and when I say West, I mean primarily Western European countries and their leadership. And what you've seen throughout this conflict is a bunch of waffling and kind of weak, almost requests to Putin. You know, please stop. Please, you know, please negotiate. And you're seeing a rhetorical shift from them that is, instead of saying please, they're saying you're going to do this or else, which is what Putin's been needing to hear for the last 3 years. But what's interesting to me is what's causing that shift in rhetoric. And there's got to be some intelligence they're getting that's telling them it's now it's time to kind of put the boot on his neck, so to speak. There's something going on. And the fact that the Germans are now saying we're going to send weapons, but we're not going to tell you what they are.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to tell you when it's happening, which, you know, people criticize the Germans for being very public about their weapon shipments and what they're doing with their military. But since World War II, they were like, hey, our military operations need to be very public. We need to keep that open to the public. It's kind of part of their constitution. And in reference to that history, I kind of understand it, but you still should be private. But the fact that they're being private now, all of a sudden, tells me they might be getting a new capability shift, like maybe a Taurus missiles. So we'll see, right? We'll see what happens. I mean, it's one thing to make the threat, you do this or else. It's another thing to actually act on that and give them the find out portion of the FAFO equation.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what it's going to be, is they're going to end up hitting that find out. And did you see last week as well that we ended up having the EU talking about giving more money over to Ukraine now?
Yeah, no, they've been discussing that. And I think the main thing that you're starting to see now with the Europeans is they're starting to get to a point where they've kind of weaned themselves off of the energy tit that was Russia. And I think that's part of what's giving them the freedom to be able to be more combative towards Russia. So I think what you'll start to see, too, is a lot more economic pressure. And I know people say that, oh, the sanctions were comprehensive and you can't sanction them anymore. It's not true. Russia has that shadow fleet and they transfer oil over into other countries in Europe. European nations are buying it and they know they're buying it, but they haven't had another option up to this point. But they're getting to that point. So I think you're going to start to see them squeeze the economics of Russia more and more. And I think that's really where wars are won. Wars are economic. As much as they are kinetic. So if you can squeeze the money out, you can't buy bullets with hopes and dreams.
Thank you. Let's see here. Runasaur says, Matt, your audio is usually fine, just set on low volume. The problem is usually everything you share with us is set way louder. I could be wrong and not sure what's up today, though. But yeah, hey, everybody, new studio set up. And I literally, like, if I had told you guys what it took for me to get this sucker set up this morning, you'd be like, okay, thank God he's actually streaming today. It's a pain in the ass. So everybody just chill out. It'll be fine later. I think because the mic probably got damaged during the move. But either way, listen, I'm going to end up going and get another one that's more compatible with the system, because that's my biggest problem. Yeah. Anywho. So thank you guys for that. Stephen Walkie coming in, gifting that Speak the Truth membership. Greatly appreciate you, brother. Thank you for that. So I don't see a freaking ceasefire taking place over inside of Ukraine. I don't see Istanbul doing a damn bit of good. Any negotiations taking place over there whatsoever. I just don't see it. I think the biggest news today is, number one, that we ended up having a hostage release. Number two, that we have basically an extension taking place, because there's going to be another round of freaking talks with Iran. Why the U.S. is agreed to another round of talks with Iran is what really truthfully bothers me. I don't know why we would do that. There's no point.
I don't either. I mean, they've said what their intentions are, and I believe them. Right? They said, we're going to continue to enrich uranium. There's nothing you can do about it. And we've said, look, if you intend to continue to enrich uranium, we're going to break it. So it's like, okay, you said what you said. Go break it. Like, I'm not a fan of war or strikes or any of that stuff. I mean, I get the consequences of it. It's not good. But the consequences of inaction in this case, I think, are worse than the consequences of action. Just do it. Pull the Band-Aid off. Break that shit. Send a signal to the rest of the world that might try to use nuclear weapons for terrorist activities. You have to.
Well, I don't know if you saw it either. We ended up having one of the biggest... you did. We talked about it. They ended up having one of the largest freaking shipments from Iran to the Houthis that ended up getting intercepted. And, dude, the size of that, it's insane. And you and I were actually talking about debt court of all things. I mean, that's huge. That means Iran, number one, is lying and they can't be trusted. And they just proved it again over the weekend. They said that they were not supplying the Houthis anymore, that they're not taking part in any of that crap, and that they, you know, somehow don't have any control over them at the same time. And yet here we catch them freaking red-handed sending more shit to the Houthis. I, for the life of me, don't understand why we would even attempt to negotiate with them at this point. I think those ships, we shouldn't even intercept. We should just sink.
Absolutely. And then we should film it, because that ship would have been dramatic if you hit that with a HE round.
Well, yeah, just hit the sucker.
Considering what it was carrying. Yeah. But it's like the scorpion and the frog. You know that story, right? That kind of parable.
Tell me about it.
Okay, so this is like an old tale, right? Where there's a scorpion and a frog, and they're on an island, and it's flooding, and they're stuck on the island. And the scorpion is begging the frog, like, "Hey, basically, give me a ride on your back, and get me to the other side." And the frog's like, "Dude, no, you're a scorpion. You'll sting me. You know what I mean? Like, why would I let you jump on my back?" So he's like, "No, man, but you'd be saving my life. Why would I sting you if you're saving my life and taking me across the river?" So the frog's like, okay, he gives in, he relents. And then halfway across the river, the scorpion stings the frog, and the frog's like, "Now we're both going to die. Why did you do that?" And he goes, "Because I'm a scorpion. That's what I do." Right? Like, that's who I am. And that's basically like with Iran, right? You can't be surprised when Iran conducts terrorist activity. Well, let me clarify, the IRGC and the Islamic Republic, right? Not necessarily Iranians, because there are some pretty decent Iranian people out there that hate the IRGC. And they get really mad when you say Iranians do this stuff. So, the IRGC, that's what they are. They're a terrorist organization in the form of a state government. That's it. That's what they are. You can't be surprised when they do terrorist stuff. It's who they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Oh, well, brother man, I wanted to make sure I come on and check in with everybody today. I appreciate you coming on as well for this quick update. I would rather jump off and get my mic issues fixed and work on getting that done. And then we'll touch base. Are you going to be available tonight? Because I got a feeling there's going to be more stuff coming out today.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Okay, cool. All right, so let's go ahead and knock that out. Hey, I appreciate you, though, for coming on this morning. I really, really do. And then we're going to set up.
No worries.
Yeah, we're going to set this up. We're going to make sure it's nice and clean and everything else here in the future. So appreciate you coming on this morning, giving your feedback. Nate Vance, ladies and gentlemen. Nate Vance. Hey, Nate, by the way, if people wanted to find you, I know that you got an X account that's moving now. You want to throw that out there?
It's at Vance Nate, as a matter of fact. So you can, you know what? I'll just type it in the comments. There we go. Let me do that before we get off live.
I'll throw it up on the screen for everybody at home as well, so that they can see you. This is Nate Vance up over on X. Make sure you guys go follow him. He actually knows quite – I'm actually impressed at your freaking knowledge and skills. Like, after I first met you, I pictured you to be like just everybody else, like another dumb grunt. But, dude, I'll tell you, like, your knowledge when it comes to geopolitics and all that other stuff is pretty cool. So, love it.
All right, man. Well, I'll see you this evening then, I guess.
All right, brother, man. I'll talk to you in a bit.
All right, take care.
Bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I hear you and your complaints, but I wanted to make sure the studio gets set up. Guys, this place is going to look awesome as soon as all of the stuff comes in for it, so don't worry about that, and new mics and all that other crap. So the studio is going to get up and running as it should be. Thank you guys for joining me for another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. I'll see you this evening, 9 p.m.
Some crimes are never forgotten. Others are lost to history. Those are the ones we focus on in Crimes of the Centuries, a history meets true crime podcast revisiting murders, trials, and frauds that once dominated headlines. I'm Amber Hunt, your host and a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. If you like true crime that feels both cinematic and historical, find Crimes of the Centuries wherever you get your podcasts.